Spring turkey season is upon us, and don't be caught out in the woods without having Onyx Hunt on your phone. One feature Onyx has that is often overlooked for turkey hunting is their recent imagery filter with their elite memberships. This imagery is updated week to week, and it comes in extremely handy, especially when you're trying to find these gobble zones where these turkeys will go out in a high spot on a fresh clear cut and strut around all day long. Actually, I was just looking at it on Onyx where the timber company just came into Andrew's Club and did a very small clear cut along this creek. And I can see the high spots on the topographical map, but also I can see exactly where they mulch. And those are going to be hot spots for finding gobblers, especially mid-morning after they get off their hens, getting up on these little high spots in this fresh, small clear cut along the creek and strutting and gobbling all day long. If you want to give Onyx a try, you can actually download it for free, try it for 7 days. And if you decide to purchase, you can use the promo code Southern and save on your premium and elite memberships. So going into this turkey season, know where you stand with Onyx.
Look, y'all know we harp on it a lot. You need a good pair of binos. Yeah, I never hunted with binos until I was almost into my 20s. I never did it when I was a teenager or anything like that, or when I was a kid, we never had binos. And when I bought my first pair of Vortex binos, the first binos I ever purchased back in like 2015, it immediately made a huge difference for me, especially in the turkey woods. So give yourself the advantage of a good pair of binos this spring, whether you're looking for more of like an entry-level bino like the Vortex Diamondbacks or something really, really nice like the Razors. Vortex is going to have something for you. And hey, don't pay full price for it. Use our discount code at eurooptic.com. Use the code SGN10 to get a discount on any Vortex optics that you want to order. Again, that's eurooptic.com, code SGN10 to go get a discount on any Vortex product you order. If you live in the Gulf Coast region, you need to find yourself at the EcoWild Expo May 10th through the 12th in Mobile. It is the premier outdoor expo for the Gulf Coast region, and we're going to be there. We're going to have a booth. We're super excited about it. Can't wait to meet you guys that live down there. We absolutely love the Gulf Coast region, so to be a part of this show, we're super excited about. We're going to have past podcast guests there at our booth for you to talk to, guys who are relevant for your area, who you can talk to, you can pick their brain, you can joke with them, laugh with them, tell them your story, whatever you want to do. It's going to be an awesome time. We're already working on some past podcast guests, but hey, if you live in this area and you have a suggestion for someone you want to see at that show, write in and we'll see if we can get them. There's going to be all kinds of exhibitors at the show that are focused on hunting, fishing, conservation, and recreation. There's going to be activities for the whole family there. They got axe throwing, archery. They're going to have our podcast booth. And then for the kids, they got touch tanks, a honeybee exhibition, a raptor show, kids fishing tank, BB gun range, and a butterfly house. So you're going to love it. Your kids are going to love it. It's going to be an awesome time. So head on over to ecowildexpo.com to get more information on the show and to go ahead and grab your tickets. And hey, mark it on your calendar. May 10th through the 12th. Be there. We want to see you and we're excited to talk to you. So we'll see you at the EcoWild Expo this May 10th through the 12th at the Mobile Convention Center in Mobile, Alabama.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast.
Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/the Southern Outdoorsman. Now let's get to the episode.
Presented by Hunting Exchange, a marketplace for serious hunters by serious hunters.
Welcome back, everybody, to an outro for Mr. Bill Vail's episode. Jacob, what'd you think?
Oh, it was, again, hopefully y'all had your floaties on, man, because we've gotten into some deep water. And if you can't swim, hopefully you could float along the conversation and re-listen to it a couple times and really kind of get an idea of what he's saying. But, no, I mean, you know, 100% on board kind of just the conversation as it happened. But the thing is to remember with Bill is the area of the country that he's in. He's in Michigan, extremely high deer hunting pressure. And if I had a guess, you know, something that we'll talk to him on the next episode is the availability or lack thereof of thick cover up there and what that habitat looks like when it comes to security cover that bucks are trying to get away from, you know, humans and everything else up there, especially when they're doing man drives, gun season, the whole nine yards. But clearly 50 years of hunting experience, he's come up with his theories and his ideas of what works for him. He's extremely successful. So we'll see some photos of his. Well, actually, if you're listening to this, by the time you listen to this episode, you probably, if you're on social media, have seen the photos of his, you know, trophy room. And it's pretty impressive. So, you know, there's that. But Andrew, I don't know, I'll throw it right back on you, Andrew. What you thought, man?
Went off the deep end pretty quick on that one.
Andrew couldn't swim. I was over here watching him, and it was just like drowning, bro. I was watching him drown, and there was nothing I could do to help
him. I was thoroughly confused for a good first part of that episode. I was trying to figure things out, but it ended up being really good. I think we covered a lot of cool. It's a different mindset for sure. I mean, it's definitely interesting. I don't know how much it applies down here versus up there, you know. It's cool to hear and everything, and I'd be curious to try to, like, relate some of that stuff. Like, go back to the map and look at some of the deer that we've tracked over the years and see if they did all that stuff that he was talking about. But part of me just wonders if that's more of a Midwest thing. I'm not saying it is. I'm just wondering if it is, because we found, like, the bedding stuff that he talked about, like Wendover back, that type bedding. I just really don't think that happens down here.
Well, and he actually seemed pretty open-minded about that. He said, you know, there was a lot of scenarios that, you know, that don't necessarily follow that, you know, depending on the cover and those type of things. Water being one of them, you know, all those kind of change.
Yeah.
I felt like I was back in my teenage years, and I was lifeguarding, and I had this chick. Her name was Sherry. And Sherry was a big old girl. And so it was like one of those Sunday afternoons. I had a big family reunion, and there was a shallow end and a deep end. And all of the family was lined up along the transition, you know, those little buoys. So everybody was like right there, that way they wouldn't drown. Well, Sherry gets out. Sherry goes over there to the diving board, and Sherry's standing there. And all of her family, there's like 20 of them. They're all standing there, and they're like, "Go, Sherry, go, Sherry." And then Sherry looks around, and then Sherry jumps off the deep end. Sherry sinks straight to the bottom. I mean, so quick, she's gone. I jump off. I have to go after Sherry. I'm like a quarter of Sherry's size. I'm doing my best to get Sherry back up to the top. Like, absolutely doing my best. Sherry's flailing around. Sherry can't swim. That's kind of how I felt at the beginning of this podcast. I felt like Sherry. Like, I done bit off more than I could chew. Like, I done sunk to the bottom. I'm trying to make it back up.
That's a lot for Michael Pike to say.
Yeah. So, like, I'm not the best when somebody's trying to describe something, I guess, verbally. Like, I'm more of like a, if I can see it, then I can put it together, because whenever someone's talking, I'm trying to put it together in my mind with a picture. That's just how my brain processes stuff and how I think about stuff.
Me too. Michael's saying that he's a picture book reader.
Yeah, I could study an exam or test for, like, for nursing school or anything like that. Like, just look over it the night before, pass it with an A. You ask me 3 months down the road what happened, I have no clue. Like, no clue, like, what we talked about. But anyways, so I'm like a visual learner. Like, I see it and I can remember that for a short period of time. I'm trying to picture all this stuff, but there's so much going on that is kind of tough. And so it was very, very easy to get lost. So I think that we're going to try to make this a visual episode too, right?
Yes.
I didn't know if y'all wanted to go ahead and tease that or not, but
that's enough. We'll tease it that much. But yes. Yeah. I'm right there with you. He started describing a lot of that map stuff, and I immediately tried to pull up the map and try to figure out how I could kind of relate it to what I do down here, I guess, and our topography
And it was just difficult to put together. Now that I've thought about it for a little while and I'm kind of looking at the map, I feel like I'm kind of getting it. And like, we got a map in front of us right now. And I'm going to try this. I'm actually going to print this out so I can get, like, with a pen and actually, like, trace the lines of, like, paths of least resistance. My biggest question was, you know, when you're starting to draw on the map, like what he wants to do, how do you follow those paths of least resistance? You know, like, obviously you got your creek bottoms and stuff, but he had a bunch of other lines on there too on his picture, and I couldn't quite tell what he was following.
Well, what I would do is be like, all right, if you were looking at traversing this area,
yeah,
what do you feel like for yourself would be the easiest path? So the easiest path, like, in this would be the roads, would be around the water. It would be, like, the more open stuff, which is going to be, like, on the map. It's going to be, like, the more dense canopy versus, mm-hmm. like, the more,
super thick
understory.
Also, you got to think about this, too. This the difference in terrain and habitat type.
Yeah. Okay?
Like, slight rolling hills is going to be different from more mountainous stuff
yep.
versus flat land versus hill country that's not maybe big in elevation but really steep. I mean, there's a lot of different factors of, like, how truly forced into certain spots are deer when it comes to path of least resistance. Because some areas, path of least resistance could be 360 degrees in any direction until it hit a thicket or a creek or something like that.
Yep.
Which is different from being in hill country or mountainous country where you have super steep areas, you have bluffs, you got benches, you've got all those kind of things. And then compared to some stuff we're looking at here, which is more just like kind of gently rolling hills with some steeper topography in some certain locations or like longer ridge systems and stuff like that. So I think it depends on kind of where you're at, but just kind of drawing those lines out, you know, through all the saddles, through all these, off these ridge points, you know, down along the creeks and everything else, and any of these other, you know, terrain features, which is something interesting. That was one thing I thought that, if listeners, like, if we can put a video out there on some of this stuff, could help some people really kind of find some of these hubs of activity when they kind of look at it. Because I've seen some examples. I've talked to Bill quite a bit more than, of course, like what we did today, and have a pretty good understanding of how he goes about doing this with the lines on the map and finding these hubs of activity. Instead of just looking for a thermal hub, but, like, actually drawing everything out. But, okay, if a buck's going from north to south, east to west, or whatever, he's going along this ridge system, potentially, where is he going to be traveling on this ridge system? Not just on the ridge, but, you know, top third, bottom third, halfway up the ridge, top of the ridge, that kind of stuff. And then drawing those lines out and kind of seeing where they're all crossing.
And I've done this quite a few times. I was trying to find a screenshot. That's what I was doing, like, the first part of the podcast, going back through, like, my 1,000 screenshots that I've done and trying to find where I've done that in the past. What I was going to ask him is, does he also use cover as one of those lines? So lines of cover, you know, he was talking about path of least resistance, but, you know, a lot of these deer use cover, you know, as their travel routes. So I didn't know, because when I did it, I used cover also, like, you know, if this is the best way to get from point A to point B was this little stretch of cover, that would also be a line. Not necessarily all just topographical features. Yeah. So that was one question I was going to ask, and I had it written down somewhere, but I don't think we ever got to it.
Really, it's kind of another way of finding – it's just another way of finding compounding features is all.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's really exactly what it is. And especially when it comes to the, like, thermal hub question I had about him, it kind of dawned on me in the middle of that question what I was saying, and that's exactly what it is. You're looking for, like – yeah, here's a thermal hub, but where can I find a thermal hub that has, like, a bench and two saddles feeding into it? You know, where you got all these different things coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing he outlines in his book, in the diagrams he sent us, where he's got, like, the single intersection or whatever, double and then triple intersections. It's basically where three lines come together, like those lines he draws. That's like the triple. That's a really good one. So pretty interesting stuff. I like that map scouting aspect of it a lot.
What do y'all think about the your rural one with the wind theory about using the wind to their advantage, either with a tailing wind in more open terrain habitat or some kind of headwind, you know, when traveling?
I've definitely seen the tailwind when they go to, like, a food plot. Like, when I used to be in a hunt club, I would have deer that were typically bedded, let's say, like, you're looking down at a food plot from, like, a shooting house or a tree stand. they would always be bedded to off to the west, mm-hmm. and they would approach. But depending on the wind, sometimes they would come into the northwest corner of that field, and they would feed down. That was with a northwest wind. If the wind was ever out of the east, they would cross above the food plot. It was a power. It was on a power line. The power line was about 4 to 6 feet tall. They would cross about 20 yards above where the food plot was, wrap around to the northeast corner, and they would feed back down out into the field. So they when they got to that open area, they always had the wind at the back while they were actually feeding. So they would wrap around to the other side in thick mm-hmm. cover and enter, so they had the wind at the back.
Yeah, I've heard Michael Yates talk about that too, in conversations with him, or like how, you know, they'll like kind of hook into a field. Like you said, they might walk into a field, and the second they get into the field, they then switch to, you know, having a tailwind if they're coming in with some kind of headwind or quartering wind. And to me, this makes sense in areas with really high hunting pressure, like really high hunting pressure. And like the way I look at this is in some of these areas, like I've heard people talk about, say like in Michigan, where you have a bunch of small properties, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 acres, 100 acres with quite a few guys on each property. If these deer are constantly getting bumped, they're going to get conditioned to a certain point, especially if they're in an area that does have more prevailing winds or like a more consistent wind currents, as you could say, to actually use that to their advantage when they're traveling, especially after being bumped, or potentially if they're going to a destination food source that they've been bumped from the past or been shot at or whatever. Now, in areas where, you know, say you go out to the, somewhere in the far, far Midwest or something like that, or areas that just the hunting pressure is a lot lower, or like the hunter density is lower, I feel like, you know, maybe or maybe not, it's as much of a factor, if even a factor, just because, you know, they're not having all that human intrusion and maybe they don't have as many predators. I'd be curious to know and talk to Troy Pottinger about that, because Troy, in an area where he's not in Idaho and Washington, but especially Idaho and western Montana for whitetails in the mountains, you know, dealing with so many predators, not only you know, hunters and humans, but mountain lions, wolves, black bear, grizzlies. I mean, there's all these different predators trying to kill a whitetail, and I wonder how much more it plays a factor out there potentially as it mm-hmm. does in an area where maybe they just deal with coyotes and humans.
Yeah. So. I wonder about all the same stuff. One thing I don't like about the wind rule for around here, or I guess rule one, is so often I'll see movement like real early, or like first light, last light, specifically last light. And I mean, down here, even in the wintertime, there's pretty much no wind those times of days on the vast majority of days. It's very, very still. And sometimes you can have good thermals, and I don't know, maybe they're using the thermals, but it almost seems sometimes like we're, I don't know, maybe they use sound more than that, even when they're moving, because a lot of times they'll be skirting those edges and stuff, and they'll be like right there on that transition right at last light. So I don't know, maybe they're using their ears to their advantage because it's so still in the wintertime, you know.
I definitely feel like, especially later in the season, eyes and their ears play a bigger factor in some areas than the scent and nose. And I feel like it could be potentially opposite early season, when maybe the you know, wind, their nose is more of a factor early season. And this is just a theory. I have no evidence against this. That is something
think about the best times it is to scent something. It's going to be like when it's warmer and when it's moist. You know, if it's drier air conditions, colder, your nose just typically has a harder time smelling those certain smells. So I would assume it would be the same thing with a deer. You know, you'd be less reliant on that later in the season as it gets colder, as it gets drier, versus at the beginning when it's more warm and, you know, humid.
It's kind of like, you remember that hunt we had last year? It was kind of towards the tail end of our rut around here. And I can't remember if you saw something. It was over where we killed our bucks. Mm-hmm. And right at last light, I had that one come out and come and like get underneath mm-hmm. me and everything, and spooked it right at last light. Mm-hmm. That one came off the bedding point. I heard it, like, I don't know if I heard it get up, but I heard it, and it would like walk and then stop and for like a long time, and then walk like 50 yards and stop for a long time, to where, I mean, it was probably like a 30-minute interaction, and it made it like 100 yards. And it, what it did is it came off the top of the hill, the transition's coming down, dropping down into the bottom. The transition comes all the way to the creek, and it worked that transition down and worked the transition and then like hooked around and was walking straight down the creek on the transition in the thick stuff, which is where I was. So it got directly underneath me, but that's what I thought it was doing. I thought it was, because it was so still and so quiet, there was nothing going on. It was like silent. And it would just stop, and I feel like it was listening.
This podcast is supported by Hunting Exchange. Now, Hunting Exchange, if you haven't heard, is an app for iOS and Android that is your one-stop shop to buy and sell all of your used hunting equipment. Now, the great thing about this, especially as a buyer, you can go on there and find some great deals on used equipment from other outdoorsmen from across the country. One great thing, you go on there, unlike social media platforms like what you would find on, say, like Facebook, you can actually go on Hunting Exchange and find some great deals on bows, tree stands, saddles, technical apparel, knives, broadheads, the whole nine yards, really. One great thing about it is, again, it's secured and supported by PayPal. So when you go on, all your purchases are insured through PayPal, so you can buy with confidence. Now, the great thing is also as a seller, you can go on there and be a part of a great network of other outdoorsmen and be able to go on and sell whatever gear you'd like and be able to reach more people without having to worry about being banned or blocked on social media platforms like what we see on Facebook. Again, it's a great place to go, purchase your gear, and also connect with other outdoorsmen across the country.
This podcast is supported by Mark's Outdoors. If you're from around Birmingham, you know of a staple in the hunting community here, and that would be Mark's Outdoors. They've been in business in the same location for over 40 years, family-owned and operated, and they have a reputation for being one of the best bow shops in the Southeast. As we inch closer and closer to deer season, if you haven't already, it's time to dust off that bow and make sure that she's ready to roll for this hunting season. Go stop by Mark's Outdoors and check out their archery counter with Mark and Robbie, two guys I've known for years, excellent bow techs. They've worked on my bow since I started bow hunting. They got all the knowledge and accessories that you need to get ready to rock for this bow season. While you're in there, also make sure you check out their gun counter. They got a ton of nice rifles, from everything from AR platforms to nice deer rifles, and a bunch of nice shotguns as well. They also have one of the best knife selections in Alabama. I mean, really nice stuff. All kinds of custom knives in there, and their ammo selection is just unbeatable as well. We're thrilled to have Mark's Outdoors on board, and we thank them for supporting the podcast. Now we're going to ask you guys to go support them.
That's when I always see deer on like the most edge. Mm-hmm. Is like even doe groups, like when it's super calm like that, it's like they are like on pins and needles. Mm-hmm. In most situations, like even if they're coming to a feed tree, like they're listening because they're like they can't smell as good. And again, maybe dropping thermals, that's another thing, like him dropping down to that spot, knowing that spot pretty well. Mm-hmm. You know, dropping down to where he's at, he's catching all those thermals dropping down from above him in that kind of younger transition habitat. And you know, he's catching all those thermals,
smelling some prime stuff.
You know, that may be one reason why some of these deer move early. Like the buck, for instance, that came up to the greenfield last year, he basically positioned himself
to catch fallen thermals.
To catch fallen thermals. But, it, you know, thinking about, you know, what we were just talking about, the wind offers, like, cover noise. And that would allow him to move to a certain place and then set up and then just kind of hang out there, listen around. Mm-hmm. You know, scent check, you know, with thermals once they start dropping, but it also offers him that cover of sound to move from point A to point B before, you know, that wind does die off and, you know, it gets really quiet.
Yeah, I always see better deer movement if there's like a nice, you know, 3-5 mile an hour breeze. It's like it always seems like the deer are like more comfortable moving, and they're like they're using their vision, especially they're kind of in the area of like on a habitat break between, you know, real thick cover and open stuff. But even in thick cover, if you got a nice little wind, I mean, it seems like they kind of want to bebop their way through there. Even like a mature buck kind of bebop their way through there. And then they get to that transition line. They pause just inside that thick cover, mm-hmm. use the visual, and then they either come out or they work their way down the edge of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's frustrating, man, because I was watching that opening and he was working down the edge. And he was so much on the edge that I thought, I was like, I had my rifle up ready to go because I thought he was about to pop out. But he just came right down the edge. I mean, just inside the hardwoods, not out in the cutover, which is kind of interesting. I was watching the cutover, and he was working the edge inside the woods. Mm-hmm. So that was aggravating. Yeah.
But it brings back just a lot of things. What? What'd you get, Mike?
Was this during the rut?
No, this is later.
It was at the very end of it. Very, very.
So he still could have been seeking does, though?
What day was that? I can tell you what day.
Because the same thing happened to me when I had a mature buck.
Where was that?
A long time ago. He stayed out of the cutover. All of the other deer were in the cutover, but he stayed out of the cutover and scent checked from outside of it.
I'll tell you what day it was here in just a second.
But it brings back up just a lot of kind of questions of like just the overall deer movement. I think now looking at this, I feel like thermals play such a huge role, especially, you know, I don't have a whole bunch of experience. I'm not going to say anything about flatlands because I don't know anything about flatlands, but especially in the hill country, areas that I have experienced hunting, thermals, I feel like, play such a factor in that thermal switch in the evenings, plays such a factor with that buck movement, especially if there's no other outside factor for, you know, movement early, whether it's a cold front, you know, of all that being equal, you know, if it's like a consistent temperature, it seems like that thermal switch is like something that gets them on their feet and gets them to start easing their way into the next kind of transition area as they kind of work towards that destination food source in the evening or whatever else they're trying to head to. Because it's like you have so many close encounters right at last light with like big bucks, mature bucks, and it's like they are just making that switch, and you're not super far from the bedding cover, but they're just making that switch. They're getting up, and the second you feel those falling thermals, that's when you're starting to hear them.
Yeah.
And then you're like, so it's almost like setting up in a lot of these situations, and we're going to talk about this a little bit. I had a listener do this, which we'll talk about in just a little bit, but hunting that thermal switch and hunting for when that thermal does start dropping as that buck cart's working his way through that area, be able to set up for that. And I'll just mention Jordan, a listener of the podcast, new bow hunter. It's been just at a year since he started bow hunting, and I think just hunting in general. And he killed a really nice velvet buck in North Carolina opening weekend, you know, implementing, you know, that tactic of hunting thermal switches, which is pretty advanced tactics. He took that from PK, from one of PK's episodes earlier this summer. So, yep. What's up, Mike?
That was January 10th that happened, Mike. So it was post-rut. It was that cold. I had on everything I had. I remember I took that because I was like, I have on everything.
Oh, January 10th. So you're coming around that secondary. Is that second?
Yeah, it could be that secondary.
Because I hunted out there on the 18th.
God, it was cold.
Well, I hunted there on the 18th, and that's when I had those two really nice bucks. I mean, bumping does hard, mm-hmm. like super hard.
Mm-hmm. So, same area, too.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's probably what he was doing. It was kind of calm, but he was just trying to, see if any deer had been slipping through right there or up above him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. That's always fun, though, that, like, winter when it's just, like, it's so cold and you're, like, bundled up and you get that, like, quiet stillness at last light and you just hear, like, and you can, like, hear it and it stops and you're like, ooh, is that a deer? And you're, like, waiting and waiting and waiting and then it, like, really gets going and it's, like, and it's, like, just walking. You're like, oh, it's a deer. Here it comes.
See, that's when I break out those sticks. It's, like, in that type of stuff yeah. and I just do my own. Like, let me get these deer thinking there's another deer already down here.
Oh, yeah. And they just come right out.
What's your thoughts on Bill talking about the whole handkerchief thing?
Oh, I love it.
I love it,
I need to figure out if that's legal here because I'm doing it. That is awesome.
I'm telling you, I really wish you could use, like Bluetooth speakers. I'm telling you. I'll give you some Bluetooth speakers, and I will have me that electric remote control little truck down there on the ground, and I'll be like, I tell y'all, like, we need to do it just for fun, like, not even be hunting, just go out there and film it. I promise you it'll work.
Just check the regs first.
No, I like the handkerchief.
So, better explain the handkerchief for anyone that might not caught it during the main episode, because I'll be honest, I walked out when y'all were talking about it, or, like, walked back in.
You gotta take a leak.
So, explain it to me. All right.
White handkerchief.
So basically,
just take it away, Mike. All right. Take it away, bro.
Get it, Mike.
So,
oh, Tyler Malone's like, take it, Mike. Steal it, boy.
So basically, like, when you're like blind calling or calling like from a thicket, so first thing the deer's going to want to do is he's going to use his hearing. He's going to hear the sound. Okay. So then he wants another confirmation. Can you see? No. Okay, so then he's going to try to smell. Mm-hmm. So then he's going to try to come downwind. Well, if you have these little flankers where you have either the dirt where he's basically raked away or you have some kind of scent, use the scent. And then when the deer actually comes up into the thicket, that's when he has the visual. So the visual is the handkerchief. So now he's heard it, he smelt it.
A white handkerchief.
And now he's about to see it. And that's what's going to bring him in.
Yeah, did y'all specify that with them?
Yeah. So what he's talking about, you know, if you have the wind straight in your face off to your left and right, mm-hmm. I don't know, 20 yards away,
yep.
you know, make you a little scrape. And it's kind of interesting. I found it interesting how he said he He was like real specific about the scent. He's like, just a Q-tip. Like, mm-hmm. just, right. you know, guys get those freaking spongy scent exactly. wicks and they'll soak that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, it does not take that much
right.
for sure. And I would rather it be like, a, maybe that, you know, curiosity. You always hear people curiosity say like,
scent.
You always hear people like, oh, the scent spook them and everything. I'm like, well, man, it's like.
How much are you putting out?
How much are you putting out?
Right.
Because I can see, again, I can see what my dog can smell. And it's ridiculous what he can smell. Like, he can, I can, we did this up in Tennessee, my buddy Nick's place. He was wearing knee-high rubber boots and short grass, and we were doing a track, and Boone was like 4 months old, and he tracked Nick, knee-high rubber boots, like scent free, quote unquote, through tall grass, and my dog can pick that up at 4 months old. A deer's got a better nose. A mature buck has got a better nose than a 4 month old dog. So
and more experience.
You gotta yeah. So you gotta think if you go out there and you get one of those scent wicks and you've got like a shot of deer piss on it, dude. Yeah. I mean, it's probably like hitting him in the face with it. It's probably way too much. So he's specified just have like a Q-tip or something out there. So I really like that. And then you know you're scraping everything, your fresh earth, but the handkerchief thing is I like it.
It's like it's like a girl who sprays on a little bit of perfume.
Just enough. Can, oh, just dude, enough. Look
and then at you this, got, Mike. And you're like, oh, I like that. Let me get some more of that smell. And then you have grandma who's like 80 years old, who can't smell anymore, and who has that scent that'll knock you down from like 10 foot away. Like that's the difference.
Oh, dude, that's a good analogy, Mike. Yeah. Man, listen, that throws back a lot of I can relate with that. Total. Be at the club, and there's some 75 year old women there. You better watch out.
Yeah.
So the white handkerchief, he said, but put a washer in it, you know, tie it up so it's got weight to it and you can tie it around there. And yeah, it's just hanging up, I guess, at a deer's height, and you've got fishing line or something tied to it where it's like,
you
up
decoy,
in your stand.
You decoying it?
Yeah.
So, I missed that. I'm sorry.
So when he smells.
Yeah, 20 or 30 yards away.
Yeah.
And he said he could use kite string, but make sure it's black. That way it doesn't reflect light.
Non-reflective. Very specific, non-reflective. And when that buck, you know, crosses that, you know, because he's trying to swing downwind of you, and so he's supposed to hit that scent and everything first. And when he hits that scent and he checks up, you just give that thing like a little tug, little wiggle of that handkerchief. Mm-hmm. Just barely move it. And it just shakes a little bit. And he's like, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
I've heard Michael Yates say that. But, dude, that's like.
That's next level.
That is next level.
Yeah.
Dude, I like that.
I didn't think about that.
Now we're talking.
And also, I would not do this if I was ground.
It's like a jerk rig for deer.
That's exactly what it is. I'll be honest. Safety-wise, I'm going to say it right now. Safety-wise, probably wouldn't do this while I'm hunting on the ground. But if I was up in the tree, 100%. Michael would be like, I want to do it off the ground. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, safety-wise.
You have people taking deer decoys out there, so I mean, I think you're good.
I don't know many people taking deer decoys down here in public land. You might know some.
No, I'm not saying down here. I'm just saying like our listeners.
Well, anyways, man, you need to top smack on that gum. So, hey. Listen, Mike's a little abusive, boys and girls. We're going to watch out. That is pretty slick. I'm not going to lie. Like, I mean, it's a jerk rig for deer, man.
Yeah, man.
This is the question. You're bow hunting. Okay.
Yeah.
You got all the scent because you're walking around tying crap up, trying to open, you know, scrape out some dirt around your stand. You're setting up a whole area within 20 yards of your stand, and you're bow hunting.
Well, but his thought is that doesn't matter because you're covering what's trying to swing downwind of you. So the idea is, I mean, yeah, you'll have like two lines of ground scent going out 20 yards on either side of your stand. And then,
But you can shoot to that.
But what you're trying to do is catch him before he gets downwind of you. You're supposed to stop him on a crosswind and get him to come up and check that out broadside. So
I'm just playing devil's advocate. I mean,
you're
getting a little defensive over here, bud. I'm just saying.
You idiot. You don't get it.
Just making sure you understand.
I'm just saying if you're tying all this stuff out in front of you and you're trying to shoot, you know, no Andrew, you know.
I will say, I'm not big on scent control, but you better make sure that handkerchief hadn't been sitting in the back of your truck with your freaking Taco Bell or something.
Or just get that lavender or anything on there. You know what you could do? Hold on. We need somebody with some pet deer.
I know a guy.
I know you know a guy. That's what I was thinking.
I know two people.
You know what you do? Give them a couple of handkerchiefs. Get a couple of them. And wherever those deer, they have like, I don't know if those deer like have like an inside stall or something that they spend time in. I'd put that freaking handkerchief in there, dude. This is next level. I'd leave that handkerchief in there for like a week or 2 weeks. And go pick it up, and I'd go put that sucker in a Ziploc bag. Like, I'm talking like a gallon Ziploc bag. And I take it to the woods.
Oh, now we're okay. Now you're on to
listen,
something.
Listen, 4D chess bear, watch out, man.
Now you're on to something.
And then you take that bad boy out there and then go hang it up.
Next thing you know, you're gonna be opening up a little deer. You're gonna have your own pet deer. you're gonna wait till I fall asleep and go tuck the little hanky up under him.
Like, keep this warm, old Lucy. Old nanny doe.
Old nanny.
No, but dude, that's not realistic for 99.9% of people that are listening to this podcast. But
I would probably put it in. Just thinking off the top of my head, I think it'd be good to get like a gallon Ziploc and get your handkerchief,
pine straw,
dirt.
I would put like cedar or something there with it.
Yep.
So it smells, because they like to rub cedars around here. So it smells like a fresh rubbed cedar tree or something.
That's a good point.
Because then that's just another thing, you know, you got that fresh dirt.
Or some pine, yeah.
Got that cedar.
Put some green pine needles in there, too. Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, any disturbance like that, I think would attract
them. I'm wondering about, dude.
Cruiser Saddles is the newest addition to the company supporting this podcast. Cruiser is the maker of saddles and saddle hunting gear. Me and Jacob actually met Chad, the owner, at our Bows and Brews event in March of 2020. We were demoing a lot of different saddles there from a lot of different companies, and he showed up with his products, which were brand new at the time, and everybody there was extremely impressed with them, including me and Jacob. We ended up getting some of the saddles for this past hunting season and used them all year from, basically, we started hunting in August and hunted until February. No complaints. Really liked them. The durability was there. The comfort was there. The wearability was there, you know, walking in and out to the stand. So we're very impressed. You can go back to some of the episodes from last year and actually hear us, you know, live through the season talking about these things. We talked about them a lot in the podcast from last year's season. Just really impressed, and we think you would like them too. So go to their website and check them out. We ran the XC. Orders ship the same day or next day unless otherwise indicated, and you get free shipping on orders over $300. We really appreciate Cruiser for supporting this show. You guys go show them some support as well.
Whoa, guys. Hold on now. You've been listening to a lot of our content, getting a lot of free content lately. If you've been listening to the show for quite some time and enjoy the show, one way you can help support us is join our Patreon.
If you join the Patreon account, you get access to all kinds of content, including GPS studies,
giveaways,
and videos. Now click the link in the show notes below and join the Patreon today. All right, so you say you're a fan of the Southern Outdoorsman podcast and you love the show. You tell all your buddies, you might even leave us a review on iTunes, but you're not rocking Southern Outdoorsman merch. What's going on? Now, you can fix that today. Just head on over to our website, southernoutdoorsman.com/shop. You can check out the new t-shirts, new decals, and everything else we have on the website. Or, better yet, you can click the link in the show notes below and go directly to the website from there. Love to see you in the Southern Outdoorsman merch. Thank you guys for the support. I can see it. I'm telling you, I see this being very effective, especially hunting some of these thickets and doing that in like some of these thickets, like on the edge of some of these pine thickets or right inside of the pine thickets. Mm-hmm. And more so just like catch their eye and draw their eye to that, especially if it's got to be, the thing is, it's got to be thick enough where they can't see it like super, super well from a distance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If they can see it from 30 yards, 40 yards away and like truly see what it is, probably
not the best thing to do in like wide open hardwoods. You know what you could do? You could kill a deer and get you some.
I've got
like,
one. I got a tail.
Yeah, and get a tail or like get just cut it's some like, hair off of it. You know, don't cut the hide where it's gonna like rot in there, but like just cut some hair off and keep it in a bunch of deer hair in a bag.
Oh, say that again.
The handkerchief.
I know, but what about hide rotting off?
Don't cut like the hide, but just like shave some hair off that deer and put it in the bag.
Dude, I've cut many of tails off and put them some salt on it, bro. Mm-hmm. Let it set up, bro. That sucker, it dry out after a while.
Brine it.
Yeah, that's what I do, man. I got a couple tails like that, dude.
I got a deer hide in here somewhere. I don't know where I put it.
They ain't rotten, but no, dude. That's a good point. Like, for real, you put some deer like hair in there. We're thinking this is like, I'm going to take it to the next level.
Now we're talking.
But curiosity kills the buck.
Get you some clippers, shave his forehead, put his forehead hair in there. I know that smells.
Oh, my God.
That sounds weird, but I bet you that would do
something.
Dude,
if you kill. For real. Oh, my gosh, dude. I'm thinking now. You know what you do? I'll tell you right now.
You go out, you shoot you a spike.
No.
You go out there with your buck control truck.
Michael, you just. Highly illegal.
You put a little pole on top of it, and then a little tail, and then you run that thing around.
Dude, a remote control truck don't sound like a deer walking. It sounds like... No, it does not.
I'd be like...
like the freaking wheels.
They'd be tearing out of there so fast. Me and Jake would be on the escape trails killing them all. Mow them down, son.
Arrows be flying, bro.
Got him.
Okay, well, did we ever talk about that in the last outro?
We were talking about the dove hunt.
About, like you know, if you want to be a hunting douche, like on Instagram, the actual account. The account, Hunting Douche, is pretty funny.
Making some spoof videos of dove hunters.
But, you're out there, you're like, yelling, you know, a couple doves fly. Cut them!
Yeah, everyone, cut them! Like, three of them pop out of the same bush and just light up these doves.
Like some duck hunters, man. It's funny. Mike doesn't understand what we're talking about.
No, but it's okay.
I was here for the last podcast, and I don't remember that.
I know, that's why I said I don't think we talked about it, but Andrew thought we did. Yeah. Well, anyways, but hey, but no, the handkerchief, I think that's, dude, I'm all in on that.
I like the forehead hair.
That's what I was going to get. Okay, this is what I was going to get. Go to a processor. I would have a contact at a processor, find a local processor. But hey, if a guy comes in, he wants to Euro mount his deer, and he talks about, like, just cutting the head off something, tell, like, hey, dude, I don't know if you can, I don't know what the legality is, like, hey, can I pay for it or whatever, but like, hey, can you save me a couple forehead, like the actual, like, hide off the forehead of a buck? Especially, if it's from in Alabama, late October or November through, I mean, in the season, those glands are going to be working, dude. You just cut that off and just freaking just put that in that bag. I wonder if you just took that, instead of like tarsal glands, you know, everybody's all about tarsal glands, like saving, cutting tarsal glands off a buck and saving them. Instead of doing that, doing the freaking forehead gland and just cutting the forehead, like if it's a buck you're not going to mount or something.
Yeah.
Or you have somebody like, oh, I'm just going to do your mount. Andrew's got two of them in the freaking freezer right now.
Oh, I do.
What are you doing, man?
Oh, we're ready. Oh, my gosh. I forgot I had those in there.
And they were killed at the proper time.
Does somebody in Birmingham do Euro mounts for like $50? Because I'll pay you.
I know a guy.
Just bury it out back.
No,
I don't want to do that. I want it to be pretty and white. I want to
leave
it. You
bleach it after.
No, it's too much work. I Euro mounted one deer, and I was like, yep, I'm not going to do that again. That was not fun.
It is fun when we do it out back and we get a case of beer.
Okay, that would be fun.
In the back of your truck for a year.
Yeah, that's one way to do it. Yep. So,
but yeah, dude, we just get the turkey fryer out back. When we get back on this topic about this whole the forehead gland and stuff, I'm serious. Did you cut that off? And instead of the whole, you know, tarsal gland
thing. Let's do it with those $2 out there.
Okay, but I'm just telling to the listeners, like, hey, listen, I'm for real. Like, if you go to not tax insurance, because they're going to be mountain deer, but go to a processor and just tell them, hey, someone, you know, brings in like a 2.5, 3.5-year-old buck or whatever, and they're talking about like skull capping it or something. Like, hey, can you like cut off that freaking piece of that hide off the forehead and, you know, save it for me?
Yeah.
Put a couple in a Ziploc bag and be like, hey, dude, I'll, you know, buy you lunch or something. I don't know. Whatever. Whatever bartering system you can do legally. I don't know. I don't know what the legality is.
I don't know how much scent that would have. Like, I mean,
I'm not enough for
probably,
a deer to pick up. Yeah,
I'm just thinking like a lot of that is coming from
the gland.
The gland itself. So like, I don't know how long that scent lasts.
We're gonna find out.
Good question.
Yeah, that's why we can test it, Mike. Ain't nobody doing that, dude.
I'm gonna let you test it. I'm gonna test out my remote control truck.
Dude, don't be doing that in the state of Alabama, bro. You can get busted. Whoop whoop. It's the sound of the police.
What are the regs for that?
Yeah, you can't.
No electronic calls.
Yeah, no electronic calls.
It's not a call.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
That's exactly what it is.
It's an electronic truck. It just has no speaker on it.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think if you can't, because you can't harass them with drones either.
Yeah, Mike, you just get trying to get us in trouble.
You're like, well, the law doesn't say anything about RC trucks.
Well, it's not harassing them though. You have to know where they're at to harass them. This is just driving a remote control truck.
Oh my god!
I may give you the local game ward's number. I'm just gonna let you ask him.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, I want to go out there, man. I guess
he's gonna be like, you want to do what?
But and Michael's like, oh, like about like ultralight, and he's gonna be packing an RC truck. Get out of here! You're full of it, dude.
No, he's gonna drive it next to him when he walks in.
Yeah.
He's just gonna be carrying the controls.
Just run it down the hill.
He wouldn't kill anything because he had too much fun freaking jumping off rocks.
It'd be cool. Like ramping it.
It'd be cool if I like had some kind of little air horn on there too that I could like
what
you know remotely that, like
that,
hit.
That would
it'd
be disturbing like, wildlife.
It'd be like burp burp. Just like hook it up to a grunt call. Just burp. Just keep on running through there.
You're getting to the point of what we're talking about. Can't.
Yeah, that's a no no.
Oh jeez.
Nobody go do that.
It's like we're babysitting her. Yeah, but Mike, now you told people, now they're gonna think that's cool to do. You can get a lot of people in trouble. Don't do that, guys. Michael's just kidding. God.
No, I really wasn't. I'm going to talk to the game warden.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
We're going to see when I kill a 200-inch in Alabama that doesn't exist. Remote control truck, but, guys.
Hey, maybe like one of these old boys and, you know, kill on a preserve. Instead, you kill it on a, out there. That was interesting. You saw what happened. There's two deer. Well, the Kansas one's legit. It just got out of the fence. But the Kentucky one is. Did you know the story? You probably did. I actually don't know any of the stories on.
I didn't know about the Kentucky one, but
I ain't got time to be reading all these posts. I just look at pictures.
Oh man, he's trying to educate himself.
I mean, yeah, someone killed some big old freak, nasty, ugly looking digger. Who cares? I don't know, dude. I don't get fired.
People get pretty tore up about it because within about 30 minutes of the guy posting it, it was all over every freaking page I got.
It was everywhere.
I'm talking about the Kansas one. The Kansas one is the one that got everywhere. I didn't see the Kentucky one all that much except from like a couple
people. I just heard a reference to it.
Yeah. Anyways, Kentucky one was killed on a preserve in Indiana, and the guy said he killed on his property in Kentucky. And the preserve was like, nope, that guy came to our place.
Posted
a photo of him in the freaking shop, in the place, with the rack. With their logo in the background of like after he killed it.
What a peckerhead.
And he's like, yeah. And he,
I'm just trying to process. Oh, yeah. I'm trying to paint the picture right now, Jacob.
I'll pull it up. Go into the running gun page, and there's like, that was over exaggeration. I was going to say 60 posts. There's probably 8 posts about it from today. So, anyways, it's interesting. I don't know how someone think they get away with
it. I only shoot 6 points, so I'm not interested in a deer like that.
I don't know. You kill 206.
He's got like 28 too many points. Take about 28 of those points off of my shooter.
57 point.
Hey, I want to hear somebody reach out to us about using off-the-wall tactics like the acorn cruncher.
I could see people talk smack about the acorn cruncher. I think it'll work.
Yep, Mr. Ron Poole, he swears up and down,
dude,
by that
Ron
acorn
Poole,
cruncher.
I got to get him on.
I know.
He won't come on the podcast, but I've already talked to a couple other people. Oh, Richard Fott was like, dude, get him on, it'd be awesome, but he ain't going to talk.
Dude, I'll tell you what, I think that would work. It works. They're two different. They're totally different things. But here's a tip, talking about squirrel hunting, which you're going to go do this weekend.
Yeah, Mike.
I'll be alert, taking care of COVID patients.
You can go get carry two new quarters with you.
What?
Two new quarters.
Okay.
All right. And, you know, they got the ridges.
You got me interested now. Okay.
You got the ridges around the edge. Uh-huh. You'll get into a place, there'll be like a bunch of nests around, but nothing's out yet.
Just rub them together.
You get tucked in, you get your little 22 ready to roll. You got your good little tree in front of you aim off of. Uh-huh. And you just tuck in and you get those two quarters and you rub the edges against each other. And it sounds like a squirrel cutting a nut. I can't make the sound. It sounds just like a squirrel cutting a nut.
Where'd you learn that?
I can't remember. I read it somewhere. Probably.
Golden Salmon episode?
No, I've been doing that since I was a kid.
Okay, anyways, but that's interesting.
Yeah, so anyways, I want
to
hear
it'll
people's,
get them to come out.
I want to hear people's curiosity kills the buck tactics. We need
curiosity
to have a whole episode.
Curiosity kills the squirrel.
Whole episode. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I'd be curious. If y'all have got any hot squirrel tips, too.
Have you called up a buck with a remote control truck? Let me know.
Did you get a ticket for it?
I was in the back. I was in the backyard messing with the kids' RC truck, and man, this buck just came out of nowhere, dude. Just wanted to stomp it.
I'm telling you, it's happened somewhere. It is happened somewhere.
Probably.
Have you ever listen, Mike? Have you ever been around a remote control truck?
Yes, I've had a gas powered one.
Okay, but listen, I've been at the ATA show, not even ATA, NWTF show, where they get the one with the turkey decoy on, which is not legal in a lot of states. Mm-mm. And dude, they drive it around, and it sounds like an electric RC car.
Yeah, that's on pavement where you can't hear leaves going.
That's true.
I'm telling you.
Okay, that's a good point.
I'm telling
you.
Okay.
All right. Seen people do it with turkeys and ducks. People get like little RC boat duck decoys and be like,
is that legal?
I don't know. Zooming them around throughout the decoy spread. God. I'm like, huh.
That's a fast swimming duck, bro.
Oh my gosh, for real.
I don't know about that. Don't take any advice from us on this topics, guys. Oh my God. But listen, the handkerchief. I'm all in on the handkerchief. I'm all in on that freaking forehead gland. And cutting that piece of hide off. And, Mike, not even put the freaking that piece of hide out there, but just keep it in there with the freaking
hanky.
The hanky, bro. That's what I'm calling old big Hank. Who calls those deer big Hank? Who's
Newberg.
Is that? Yeah, Newberg. Old Newberg. Old big Hank killed him with the hanky,
big
bro.
Big Hank.
Old big Hank. Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm all jazzed up with that. What other I'm trying to think what other takeaways that were there. That was, man, we went down a rabbit hole just talking about
it. Was mostly the wind.
Yep.
I think it was interesting. I think the moon stuff that is going
to
end up being.
Listen, Andrew loves two words. I'll tell you right now.
Stuff.
And things.
Stuff and things.
That's me.
He describes something. It's like all that stuff. Not like he'll be like, instead of like habitat, he's like all the different habitat. He's like all those different things or all the different stuff.
No, I say habitat.
All that different stuff.
I know, but I'm just giving
all
an example.
All that stuff comes in one little area.
Yeah, all that stuff. Not all those trails or all that like habitat types or the vegetation or diversities. Like, all those things come together.
It's cool. We're speaking like a normal person.
That's our country education.
I know. Listen, we are eating and breathing these Southerner stereotypes on this podcast.
I embrace them.
It's kind of bad, bro. Mm-hmm. Had somebody reach out to us like, are y'all doing this on purpose?
Nope, just us.
Yep. Well, cool. So let me ask, from anything from this episode, like, what are some of your takeaways for like what you wanted, like what you'll actually look at maybe applying on your own scouting or the way you approach different things?
Definitely what we just talked about with the setting up for the crosswind mm-hmm. scenario with the handkerchief and everything. Definitely that. And I don't know the other stuff. I've tried all that wind stuff before, and I just don't feel like I ever got anywhere with it. I'm still going to look at it and everything, but at this point, I don't think it's really going to change anything that I'm going to do this fall.
Now, you had some experience in the past, like I did with wind at your back, right? Going in with the wind at the back.
Oh, I've done
no,
it.
I haven't done going in with the wind at my back so much. That was him.
Yeah, that was
doing like a large J hook. I have had it to where I used to be like dead convinced that about deer moving with the wind, and for a while there I was like, okay, this is absolute. And that was a long time ago. That was before I talked to any of these people. I came to that on my own because I kept trying to hunt this one spot with the right wind, and I never saw any deer. And it was back when I was hunting like the same spot over and over again. And then I hunted it with the wrong wind one day, and I saw a deer, and I was like, huh. And so I kind of dug into that for a year or two, and I was so convinced. And then slowly, as I got more experience, I just like had so many instances where it just didn't seem to be the case. And so I'm like, okay, well, maybe I was just kind of confirmation bias on that or something. You know, I was kind of looking for the pattern, so I found it. But Jacob's the one that's done wind at the back, accessing that little farm.
Yeah. Yeah, that was we did that growing up. So like I learned that as a kid and applied it to other places, and it worked. But yeah, walk in with the wind at your back, and like you do your own J hook like to your spot. There's our farm where I kind of grew up deer hunting, or some of where I grew up deer hunting. It's 89-acre farm, and you can only access it. You know, really, you can only access it from the north. So like, if you have a north wind, I mean, if you're trying to hunt, you know, some of the really good looking stuff on that property, I mean, you have to walk. You're walking with the wind at your back. You just have to. So there's a drainage system. There are actually a couple different drains. Like, you know, you call it creek, you know, with some water flow. But most of the time, they're dried creek beds. And you'd walk one of those creek beds, the edge of one of those creek beds, all the way back to the pretty much the property line. And then you J-hook up. So you'd walk directly south of the north wind or northwest wind. And then kind of J-hook up to the east. Go up over top of this ridge. And there's a stand location up there where you'd actually turn back and look back towards the north. And you'd catch deer coming back and forth right there. And then also you'd watch farther to the east, and you'd be able to look at deer down this next little drainage, kind of coming out and feeding as well. So, and it worked really, really well for us, in some of those different stand spots. But it's like, also I said, the big thing there, like J hooking, like it was a morning hunts is when we would do that. We wouldn't do it on an evening hunt, but morning hunt and get out there super, super early, get out there literally to the stand about, you know, minimum 45 minutes before daylight. That's what you'd want to do. And you were coming from low elevation, working your way up higher in elevation. So, like, all, you know, unless it was super, super windy, all your sitting, everything was kind of staying down low as you were walking in, and you kind of got up over the top of the ridge, and you were catching those deer kind of working down the side of that ridge once you got up there. So,
nice.
And I never felt like I had deer, you know, busting me or, like, crossing that trail and blowing or doing anything funky. And we killed some really good deer doing that. So,
pretty legit.
Yeah. That's, you know, a different way to look at it. Don't poke them. Easy there, Mike. Shaking
the table.
Sorry, guys.
Gosh. Anyway.
All right, boys. Anything else?
Reviews, son.
Let's do these reviews. Wrap this thing
Andrew,
up.
Andrew's reading all
I
got to
wake up in 4 hours.
Same.
5 hours. All right. Review time.
Review.
All right, Jacob. I took the tough one last week.
Are you kidding me? Are you actually kidding me right now? You right. Go back and listen to that outro again. I don't even know which ones. Which ones are we at? Like, which ones did we not read?
All right. I don't think we read the Struggle Bus one.
I don't think
this
so.
This is not a nectar plant. 5 stars. Could you imagine the pain? Go on YouTube and look up hummingbirds feeding in slow motion. I would have looked like Mike Tyson out there in the bean field. That hummingbird would have been sleeping. He definitely would have got the 1-2 combo.
Oh, that's great.
All right, Jacob. You have to read this one. Right. I took this one last week, and I smoked it.
Big buck nuts for the win again.
You can't stump me, bud. You can't do it. Smoked that one.
All right, big
buck
nuts.
So now it's your turn. Look, just roll with it. This is your natural speaking voice, okay?
All right, this is from Big Buck Nuts. 5 stars. You boys are going to have to think real hard for something.
Failures yeah, to know read. There ain't no need to be ashamed of how y'all reading them review things in your outro things y'all do. You boys should check out Hooked on Phonics. It worked for me.
Dude, you read that like a champ, Mike. You read better. Oh, my God. This guy, listen, y'all go look at the review. That was kind of brutal, man. You know, he really put
brutal
thought in how he spelled everything. Oh,
I'm impressed.
Appreciate all the new reviews. Again, if you enjoy the show, a couple of things you can do for us. Number one, share the podcast with your buddy. Absolutely share the podcast with your buddy. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure your buddy's subscribed to the podcast too. And also leave us a review if you're a listener on iTunes. Let us know what episodes you've been enjoying, what guests you've enjoyed so far, and also what future topics or guests you'd like to hear from. Appreciate all the Patreon supporters as well, and everyone that's been buying the merch, man. Shirts and everything's up on the website, rocking and rolling, and some other decals, and we are working on some other future projects as of now, too.
Yep.
So.
And that's pretty sweet.
Pretty sweet, dude.
Yeah, boy.
All righty. Appreciate everybody listening to the podcast. Make sure you tune in for Monday's episode of the Southern Outdoorsman. Y'all have a great weekend, and hopefully we have some listener success stories come in. By the way, I'll mention that right now before we wrap this up. If you are a listener to the podcast and you use tips, tactics, or anything that's been discussed on the podcast from guests or anyone else, shoot us a message either on Facebook, Instagram, or through our contact page on our website. And let us know, first send us some photos. Let us know how the podcast was impactful for you having success. We've already had really 3 listener success stories come in, 2 confirmed, still trying to confirm the other one, make sure the guy wants to come on the podcast. But some of the listener success stories have been fantastic so far this year. So we're going to be dropping those episodes in just a few weeks, interviewing those guys and trying to see what's helped them be successful from the podcast. But thank y'all again. Tune in Monday, and we'll catch you back on the next episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman. And thank you to Blackberry Smoke for the music for the podcast. Also, to follow along with us, make sure you check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And if you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/the Southern Outdoorsman. Until next time, y'all stay Southern.
You guys seem to really have enjoyed over the last year where we've went to a Q&A format every Thursday on the show where we answer some listener questions. Now, some of the most common ones that we get have to do with gear, but also how to find a good hunting buddy. You know, I'm really lucky to have a hunting buddy like Jacob. We've been on a lot of incredible hunting trips together over the years, and it's just nice to have somebody that, you know, is always down to go on that trip that you've always wanted to go on, or who'll wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go get that gate before someone else does on public land with you. Whatever the case may be. And like I said, we get a lot of questions on how do you find, you know, a group of people who enjoy that same thing so you can kind of network and make some connections. The Mobile Hunters Expo is the place to do that. Y'all heard us talk about it last year. And guess what? This year it's happening in Dalton, Georgia. We're going to be there June 28th through the 30th. We're going to be there all 3 days. We're going to have a booth. You can come talk to us. We talked to a lot of you guys last year, had a ton of fun. So looking forward to that again. But guys, I'm telling you, this is the place to come network. And there's going to be a ton of you guys there. A lot of Southern Outdoorsman podcast listeners are going to be at this show. And actually, Friday, June 28th, there's going to be an after-hour social after the expo. So what better place to go kind of intermingle, hang out with a bunch of like-minded people, and probably pick up a couple new hunting buddies. So you guys don't miss it. It's June 28th through the 30th. I'm telling you, if you listen to this podcast, this is an event you need to be at. Now, we'll see you guys at the Mobile Hunters Expo June 28th through the 30th in Dalton, Georgia.